10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Today's morning show is going to be spent with someone that many of you in southeastern Wisconsin either know or know of, because he is an energetic gentleman who, as he likes to put it, wears many, many hats. We're talking today on the morning show with Curzio Carvati, and he wants to be introduced more than anything as the founder of Kufi Farm. And Kufi, K-U-F-I, stands for Kenosha Urban Farming Institute. And on the website, one sees these words: finding solutions to feed humanity and do good by the earth. And under the umbrella of KufiFarm.org, there is a number of different research projects underway, all in one way or another related to agricultural matters. And perhaps some of you have heard of the Kenosha Potato Project, or the Kenosha Garlic Collective, or One Vine Tomato, or the Swiss Bee Chalet. All of these projects are under the umbrella of this nonprofit, KufiFarm.org, located in Summers. And I'm so excited that we can have Curzio Carvati with us to tell us the story, first of all, of where he comes from originally, his fascinating and complex background, and what is most important to him as he pursues these various projects, and also some of his hopes and dreams for the future of Kufi Farm, and the difference that he hopes that it will make, not only in this little part of the world, but the world overall, trying to advance various causes relating to feeding the human family, and doing so in a way that is safe and healthy and sustainable. So we have all of this and more to try to touch on over the next few minutes. And Curzio Carvati, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg, for having me. What an opportunity to be able to talk to so many people at once. That is radio.
And pull the mic a little closer to you.
Yes.
And yes, we're glad that you can be with us. Some of you may remember back on the 13th of November, Curzio Carvati spoke for a few minutes after we aired an interview with the author of a book called The Forbidden Garden, which talked about the Plant Institute of Leningrad, now St. Petersburg. And we touched a bit on the importance of preserving seeds, and we will perhaps touch on that a little bit later in this hour. But we're actually going to begin this conversation by talking about where Curzio Carvati comes from originally, and his intriguing background, which has a lot to do with the energy with which he lives life, and the various projects to which he has devoted that energy. So, Curzio Carvati, again, we welcome you to the morning show. Explain to our listeners where you were born and raised, and a bit about that background as it relates to the kind of person you've tried to be now, more recently, right here in Kenosha.
Thank you, Greg. One thing that everybody's going to notice is that I have an accent. And I tell you, when I first came to Kenosha, I remember calling in an order of pizza, and they could not understand me at all. So I had to ask my lovely wife, Maria, can you please place the order for me, because they don't understand me. And, you know, it's kind of I was scratching my head. How can they understand me? Oh, then I figured it out because of my syntax. Mm. So how I put sentences together, that is because I think in a number of languages, and sometimes things come out in a different way.
Right. You were telling me you speak six languages.
I'm fluent. Well, okay, let's dig in here. I was born in Lugano, Switzerland, son of an Italian immigrant who escaped Italy because he was born in the age of fascism, and he didn't want to belong to the black shirts of Mussolini. Mm. So he escaped into the mountains of Italy with the partisans, and eventually made his way to Switzerland, where he met my mom. So I was born Italian citizen in Switzerland, as in Europe, you are not born the nationality of the country where you're born, but the nationality of your father.
Mm.
And at the age of 12, I became Swiss. I served for 20 years in the Swiss Army. I always joke that I have the original Swiss Army knife that does not have a corkscrew. And my father afforded me an incredible education. I am so blessed. I pray and thank my parents for the education I received.
Hmm.
Very unfortunately, my parents divorced when I was only 2 years old. And my father was extremely gracious and good to my mother, even though they couldn't live together. He hired a German nanny. And I had several German nannies, but one of them is like my second mom, and I'm going to see her now in December when I go back.
Mm.
I'm so attached to her, Helga.
Wonderful.
I was speaking German to my nanny and Italian to my mom, and that is how my brain developed. And that is something that most Americans really don't get, this idea of, oh, we are in America and English is our language and we should only speak English. That is really bad. And Greg, you are going to appreciate that very much because you are a musician. When you, as a child, learn music, learn to read music, you are developing a second language in your brain. And that makes your brain develop in a different way and makes your brain more elastic. So it's brain elasticity that comes through knowledge of languages. So when you are fluent in Italian and German and you have, you know, like I had 12 years of French in school, so I can switch from Italian, German, French. Every other sentence could be a different language. I learn English because you really need to be able to communicate with your spouse, otherwise it's in trouble. And I had a chance to work in Poland, so mówi trochę po polsku. Dzień dobry, pani. Państwo. That's, you know, hello, my lady, hello, guys. You know, Państwo is plural of pan. Pani is feminine. Hmm. Pan is masculine. So learning languages that are so different, you kind of to learn syntax, you kind of learn etymology, and Polish is really a difficult language because there are very few words in Polish that relate to Italian, German, French.
Mm.
These are very different. Once you know Polish, you can kind of understand a little bit of Russian. While I was in Poland, I watched a lot of Russian TV.
Mm.
That's all you get there. You know, Polish or Russian. And Spanish, you know, I picked up.
Hmm.
Anyway, these languages are relevant in my life because they allowed me to develop a profession that actually took me to Kenosha. I was, my father owned a sporting goods store, traditional Swiss, you know, ski in the winter, tennis in the summer, and I got into American team sport. And that's how I ended up in Kenosha because I was traveling from Europe to Chicago. Chicago is the headquarters for Wilson Sporting Goods and Rydell. And Rydell eventually got involved with, is now known as Ripon Athletic in Ripon, Wisconsin.
Hmm.
But at one point they were called Sanit. They are the manufacturer of the professional shirts. Actually, Ripon Athletic still has the machine that was braiding the sleeves of the Packers with the colors of the Packers in the sleeve.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So all of these things kind of took me here, and I met Maria's mom on a flight between Paris and Chicago. That's the long story of how I got to Kenosha.
So that's how you met her.
Yeah.
Now, you were telling me before we went on the air that actually in terms of a desk job, a full-time desk job, that your last full-time job was back in 1994.
Correct.
So you have not been sitting around in retirement over these last 30 years. In fact, you have filled your time with all kinds of projects. Did you retire, if you will, from that kind of employment on purpose in order to be able to do these other things?
No, it was, and actually people are surprised when I say this, because understanding, and we don't have time to go into the details, but the sporting goods industry is very complicated. I was able to cut myself a niche job, because, for instance, Wilson, that is what explains a little bit in detail what a sporting goods company will do. A sporting goods company is going to develop a bunch of products, and they are going to have divisions with different policies of distribution. To make it very clear, Wilson Sporting Goods has four different divisions. You know Wilson Sporting Goods because they manufacture golf equipment, tennis equipment, they manufacture inflatables, that is the word for balls, you know, basketballs, volleyballs, baseballs, and protective equipment for baseball and football. And those four different lines don't find one channel. It's either retail or institutional, right? And like Wilson Sporting Goods has distributors in Europe, in every country of Europe, and you can count the countries. There's a lot of, because different languages, different laws, import, and all of that, you know? So they have a distributor for golf, they have a distributor for tennis, and they have a different distributor for the inflatables. They have no distributor for protective equipment because baseball and football wasn't large enough in Europe to have a distributor. I became that. I became the distributor for Wilson Europe. And because of the languages, I was able to cover Finland to Spain, Ireland to Poland, you know.
Very good. So you were able to carve out of a very successful career, but then back in 1994, you begin sort of
I had to wind my business down. Mm-hmm. My business actually got really in trouble because of the NFL.
Mm.
When the NFL first ventured into Europe with games, my clients were small businesses that were selling to private clubs, not schools. So the financing, and if you are involved with American football locally, you know how expensive that is, because the teams are very large. These are not a couple of cars. You know, in a couple of cars you move a baseball team, but it takes much more to move a baseball team. And imagine having a baseball team in Milan that plays Naples or Palermo, you know. Can you imagine that? It's so expensive, you know, and they need sponsors. They had a couple of sponsors, like McDonald's and Burger King were sponsors. When the NFL came in, those corporate sponsors went to the NFL. And that was kind of the end.
Right. Well, ultimately, it has a very happy ending, because as things changed for you on that front, it, on the other hand, opened up wonderful opportunities for you in terms of some of the things that you have explored here in southeastern Wisconsin. And let me reintroduce you. I'm speaking on today's morning show with Curzio Caravati. So we want to talk about the decision that you made at some point to purchase the farm that has become Kufi Farm, the Kenosha Urban Farming Institute. Tell us how long ago that was, and a little bit about how this opportunity came to you.
I will never forget, because I'm into numbers. You know, I really believe in numbers, and the number five is a lucky number. Many people know that. Many people relate to number five as lucky. May 5th, 1995. That was the day that we purchased the farm.
So I say 5-5.
5-5-95. Maria and I, at the point we were married and we were living in Kenosha, and this little farm became available in summers, and we were lucky to buy the farm. And the farm is really located on two small parcels. One parcel is the resident. In behind that parcel we have almost 2 acres. That's where I farm. And that land is no longer mine. It's being donated to Kufi Farm Org.
Mm, a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit.
Let me ask you before we go any further, back in Switzerland, were you a farmer? I mean, had you been a farmer, had you done farming, or was this a brand new undertaking for you?
No, in Switzerland, I was inspired by my father, and very unfortunately, my father passed at the age of 52 and was not able to do the things that I'm doing now. I'm living my father's dream.
Hmm.
My father wanted to have a farm and in Switzerland, and he owned a vacation home on Lake Lugano where we would go on Sunday. And obviously, I was a child, and I would rather play with my friends. Instead, I had to go help him. But that's how I first put my hands in dirt.
And as you purchased this farm, what were your aspirations at the beginning? What did you want this farm to be?
Well, at the beginning, the farm was owned by James Krimmels. It was known as the Krimmel Orchard. He grew evergreens. Jim was working as a postal employee. He was a mail carrier, and so mail carrier have this incredible days. You know, they work hard in the morning, but once they're done with the mail, they have the rest of the afternoon, and that's what he was doing. He developed this this evergreen farm, and as soon as we took over, we ripped out all of the evergreens. I don't believe in evergreens, and that land became my garden. At that time, we called it a garden, you know, and Maria is very much into flowers, so we were planting gladiolus, and, you know. But at one point, I thought, well, I would like to make this more about food.
Hmm.
And I met Mike Pekoski and Rich Karp. I met them as I said before, I'm fluent in German, so I met Jim Oldenauer at the grocery store. I was wearing a sport jacket with Berlin on the back. That is Berlin, Wisconsin, where Ripon Athletic is based, not Berlin, Germany. So he saw my jacket and he said, "Oh, Berlin, Deutschland." Ja, natürlich. Ich spreche Deutsch, weil ich in der Schweiz geboren bin und Deutsch gelernt habe. So I start speaking German with Jim, and he didn't know German. He's German, but didn't know German.
Right.
He was a member. He is a member of MGV Harmonia.
Ah, the singing group.
The singing group, and that's how, you know, and that's where I met Mike and Rich, and together we started Nature's Bounty, which was the first vendor at the market in at Columbus Park. So 1920, in June of 1920, I opened my tent.
Not 1920.
Oh my God! In June of 2000.
2000. Okay.
In June of 2000, I opened my tent at Columbus Park, and that was the only tent. And that was the only tent. Today, in May. In Kenosha, with two markets, Kenosha Public Market, Kenosha Harbor Market, and Columbus Park, with three markets. Columbus Park really doesn't start until later, but in May we have hundreds of tents.
Hmm.
You know, that kind of tells you how the farmers market have evolved.
Hmm. It's exciting. So your farm ultimately, in a sense, gives birth, if you will, to something that I know is near and dear to your heart back in 2007, namely something called the Kenosha Potato Project.
Yes. So actually, I need to take a step back because even before then, I started growing garlic.
Ah.
So when I was farming with Richard and Mike, we were thinking, you know, what could we grow that we can sell easily, and that's why Curcio Garlic and More.
Hmm.
But then somehow I started understanding the whole concept of seed propagation that is asexual, where plants are cloned rather than grown by seed. And that is garlic and potatoes and perennial onions. So these are the three projects that kind of grew out of it. Hmm.
So tell us more about the Kenosha Potato Project. Well, and for that matter, the Kenosha Garlic Collective, which is a kind of a similar thing. But tell us what that was all about. I mean, what the purpose was.
The beginning of the Kenosha Potato Project, really the seed in my brain was put by Michael Pollan and his wonderful book, The Botany of Desire. That is a book that I really recommend for everybody to read. I believe there are 8 copies available at the Kenosha Public Library. I have one in my hands right now that I'm going to return in a few minutes, so it will be available for anybody to read. This is a book that is in 4 chapters, and it talks about the apple, the tulip, the apple, potato, and marijuana. These are 4 crops that have changed people's life, and that people have changed because when you read this book, you are going to understand that the 3 of these plants actually come out of Russia. The garlic was first found in Russia. The apple was found in Russia, potato came out of South America. But anyway, the original plants that were discovered many years ago are not what we find in the grocery store now. There has been an evolution, and that's really why we are sitting across each other now, because Greg, you call me to help you fill the time of this interview you had with this guy that wrote the book The Forbidden Garden,
right?
And the seed bag in St. Petersburg. So when I started, I really did not have this understanding that there is such a deep worldwide effort to save seeds. I thought that we still lived on Noah's term, Noah's Ark. You know, where this guy built the boat?
Oh, Noah's Ark. Okay, Noah's Ark. Got it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Arch in French, arc in Italian.
Yeah, we say arc. Yes, okay.
Arc.
Yes.
So Noah's Ark. And there is a Noah's Ark for potatoes in Maine, and his name is Will Bonzol. So he was collecting thousands of varieties of potatoes. I had no idea that there was much, much, much more than him. I thought he was the one, you know. So I called him up and I said, "Hey, Will, I need to help you. You're getting older, and I'm getting older, and we shouldn't have all the eggs in one basket. So why don't I send you some money, and you send me some potatoes?" And I started growing potatoes.
Hmm.
And my collection eventually grew to probably 400 varieties.
Wow.
And when you grow many, many varieties, you need a lot of land, and I don't, because, you know, my farm is very small. So I discovered gardeners.com. Gardeners.com is an organization. It's a farming, gardening supply company out of Vermont, if I'm not wrong. It's in New England. Gardeners.com, you're going to find it. And Gardeners.com produces potato growing bags. These are non-woven fabric bags. And I now own, Kufi Farm now owns hundreds of them, like 400. And I have been planting 400 bags by hand. It takes a full semi truckload of compost to plant. So I've been buying 35 cubic yards of compost. Purple Cow is my supplier out of Oconomowoc. It's almost organic grade compost. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be able to see, because unfortunately we lost the webpage kenoshapotato.com, but Jen Conrad promised that she will bring it back. I have a wonderful video that shows how I plant potatoes in bags. It takes minutes. You know, you just put a layer of compost in the bag, you place the tubers in the bags, you fill the bag, you're done, and you harvest. That's all the work it takes.
And how many different varieties of potatoes do you grow right now?
Well, I have grown in my career, I have grown over 1,000.
Wow. And different kinds of potatoes.
Different kind of potatoes. And my research, now, to finally answer your question, my research is to figure out which variety will produce a larger crop in a container, starting with how many seeds. Because that's the point. When you grow potato traditionally in a furrow, you're going to put a tuber or a half a tuber that you cut in the furrow every so many inches or feet, and that would develop a plant. In a bag, you could have 1, 2, 3, 6 plants growing in the same bag. So the more plants you have, the more tubers you get. The more plants you get, the more tubers you get, the smaller the size. Hmm. When you weigh your yield is going to be smaller if you have too many plants. So finding the balance between having more plants, more tubers, but that size correctly. Hmm. Now comes in dry farming. I obviously don't have the resources to water 400 bags of potatoes.
Right.
So I am, you know, and in this world that is changing, the climate change is a world that people think, oh, that's not true. Well, yeah, it is. Climate is changing. And what is changing, and as a Swiss person, please don't be offended by what I'm saying, you know, because there are, sometimes when I talk, people are thinking, is he a Republican or a Democrat? You know, I'm purple. You know, I believe in braver angels. I believe that we need to be purple. We need to be in the middle. We need to work together to make this world a better place. And as long as we hear that climate change is a hoax, we are not going in the right direction. Please believe me, as a Swiss person who served for 20 years in the Swiss military on snow, because I served all of my days in the winter on skis. So, yes, I know how to ski. I can tell you, you go to Switzerland now and you're going to see that the glaciers are half gone. And where is that water? You know, the water that we have on this earth is finite. You cannot reduce it. You cannot increase it. If it's frozen, it's less. If it's melted, it's more. And that is why we now have these problems. We have more moisture in the air. That's not the purpose of this interview anyway, but really I believe that affects agriculture, because we really can't count on water that is, like, potatoes are grown in Idaho. Why? Because in Idaho, it's really the best crop that you can grow. So they drill holes in the ground, they put in central pivot pumps, they pump water. And that's why potatoes in Idaho are grown in circles. The circles are the measure of the radius of the pivot that sprays the water and grows the crop. But how long will you be able to do that? At one point, those water tables are going to be exhausted and you won't be able to do it anymore. So that is why it's so critical to understand how to keep our food banks, not seed banks, food banks filled without having to rely on practices that are not sustainable.
So you are, among other things, exploring this notion of dry farming. And if I understand correctly, you're trying to figure out, for instance, which varieties of potatoes can be grown successfully without irrigation.
And guess what? Out of 1,000 varieties, I dropped 800 that obviously don't fit that concept. So I'm focusing on varieties that produce a higher yield without irrigation, I also have to mention my friend Rick Machado out of California, who has been breeding potatoes, and he sent me Machado Farm potatoes that are now being actually tested in Canada, because that's another cooperation between seed banks. Like Sturgeon Bay cooperates with international, with it's the International Gene Bank cooperates with Agri Canada. Agri Canada is now studying how the nutritional value of plants will change when these plants are grown at higher temperatures.
Hmm.
And Rick Machado's potato is one of the varieties that they are testing in Canada now.
Wow. Wow. You have expanded beyond potatoes, of course, and you started out growing garlic.
Garlic.
And then eventually to perennial onions, mm-hmm. And eventually to tomatoes as well. At the moment, at Fumi Farms. Currently at Kufi Farm, what all is being grown? I mean, are all of these things being grown every year, or do you rotate
between
different things?
Everything is grown every year. Everything is an ongoing project. And because I am a one-man show, there is only so much that I can do. In fact, when I speak to people, they say, I can't believe that you can do all of this, you know. I have an orchard of about 50 trees. Because I really didn't know what was entailed in order to make an orchard profitable. I always had more bad apples than good apples. At this point, we are getting volunteers. I actually got a crew from Great Lake Community Conservation Corps. A crew came volunteering in the orchard yesterday. So I'm getting help, you know, and this year also I have to give a shout out to Angela Cassidy, who is my orchard volunteer coordinator, and with the coordinators, you know, members of her family and Great Lake Community Conservation Corps, GLCCC. This year we were able to donate 500 pounds of potatoes to Shalom Center.
Wow.
And the goal for next year is 1,000. These apples are not apples and pears. These are not perfect, you know, but they are perfectly edible. I also make fruit butters that I sell at the market. Because I'm a beekeeper, I don't spray any poison, you know. When you buy organic apples at the store, they have been sprayed with poison. They have killed insects.
Right. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that you're a beekeeper, because that is, of course, something else we want to just touch on, at least for a few minutes, the fact that, again, another project at Kufi Farm is the Swiss Bee Chalet, which you created back in 2016. Tell us what prompted you to want to go in this direction, which, of course, at the outset seems like a departure from what you had been doing before, but, of course, it is related in some really powerful ways.
Well, I am going to refer people to kufifarm.org to kind of learn more about the Swiss Bee Chalet and all other projects that I have. Because I missed to tell you, you know, when you start the interview, you said you wear several hats. So I would like to go back to that. I wear an Equinox hat. I work for Equinox Botanical Boutique. As a skincare specialist, I work. I'm a vendor at Kenosha Public Market. I have been a vendor at the market in Kenosha for 25 years. That's why many people know me, because of the market.
Sure.
And Kufi Farm. But really, what drives me the most right now is the concept of Blue Zone. We only have a couple of minutes, so I'm going to squeeze in that. The Blue Zone has nothing to do with politics. It's not blue and red. It's blue because this physician, a doctor, was putting blue dots on a map where he had patients that are centenarians. So if you drive through the mountains of Sardinia, you're going to see these signs that says you are driving through a blue zone. You're supposed to park your car, go into the cemetery, and you're going to find tombstones. He passed at 104, she passed at 112, you know, unheard of in America to have a couple to be both centenarians. thank you to Netflix. So when you are on Netflix, you want to search for The Secrets of the Blue Zone. This is a fantastic documentary that is going to take you from Okinawa, Japan, to Singapore, through Sardinia, through Greece, and you're going to learn what are the factors that make you live healthy so that you can become a centenarian. It's much cheaper to stay healthy than to be sick. And that is why the Blue Zone is so important, because this is going to reduce the cost of healthcare. And I feel I'm Blue Zone material myself. The older I become and the more credible I become, really, you need to be healthy. That is part of Kufi Farm's message. We want to live without cancer, diabetes, and dementia. These are diseases that can be prevented. And I feel that and one day, Greg, we will be able to talk about these new things about epigenetics. So epigenetics, basically, we are the genes that we receive from our parents. We can't change that. So we have 46 chromosomes, 23 and 23. And sometimes in those chromosomes, there is predisposition to something that will lead to heart failure, to diabetes. Like in my family, I have diabetes because I lost my entire Swiss family to diabetes. That is a story that I tell often, you know, that my mom, because of diabetes, had a stroke and ended up on a wheelchair, and she spent 9 years on a wheelchair, 7 years with gangrene. That is dying every day. It takes 7 years. You know, you see your mom, that makes you a little bit a crazy person. That's what I tell people. I'm crazy because of how I saw that, you know. And I go to the market. I have gone to the market for 25 years. Actually, Saturday, November 2nd was my first day off. I have done all the markets in Kenosha for 25 years on a Saturday when I was in town. So I missed very few markets in 25 years. And now I am focusing on my skincare career at Equinox Botanical Boutique. And therefore, I committed to be at the market only one Saturday per month. The next time is going to be Saturday 7th and December 8th of December, where Kenosha Public Market is at the Kemper Center. They're going to have Mary and Bright and Mary. I always confuse the two words. It's going to be a fantastic event to, you know, feature gifts that you can buy for your friends. We're going to have a tent outside the Kemper Center, maybe 100 vendors or more. It's going to be fantastic. I'm going to be roasting chestnut, hopefully. So you see how everything kind of comes in a circle, right?
Right. So the farm, the Kufi Farm, you have made that a nonprofit, and you have interesting plans for that down the road after you are gone. And part of what you are doing there is what you like to think of as legacy. Tell us about some of your thinking about that.
Well, it has been taking a while, but finally we were able to get, and I want to thank my friend Mike McTernan, because he has volunteer pro bono time to help me with that. You know, we created a non-stock corporation. That is how you actually make a non-profit in Wisconsin. You start by forming a non-stock corporation. You have to upgrade your bylaws to match with what the IRS wants. And if the ducks are all in one row, when you apply for a 501c3, you're going to get a letter from the IRS. It's like you're awarded the benefit of being a 501c3, which means that whatever you are producing and the donations that you are receiving and the funding that you are raising, that is all tax-free. You are able to do that only if the structure is such that you will not personally profit from it. So that needs to be very clear. In the bylaws, you have to state that whatever assets are built within a nonprofit will eventually either live in perpetuity or go to another nonprofit. It cannot go to any person. That is the law in America.
Right.
When we push the button, that is submit application for the IRS 501c3 in January of 2024, we got the letter back in less than 2 weeks, which is kind of unheard of. And so now we are going through the process. I am donating the parcel where we farm at Kufi Farm. Is my personal property that is going to be donated to KufiFarm.org. And I am also purchasing the land that is immediately east from the farm that will go all the way to Sheridan Road. So eventually all of that is going to become a nonprofit and will be left to the community. So when you're driving down Sheridan Road, eventually you're going to see KufiFarm.org right on Sheridan Road.
So at the moment, is Kufi Farm a place that can be visited, or is that also maybe something down the road where just somebody from the public could come and see what is happening there?
Thank you, Greg, for asking that question, because visiting the farm is really one opportunity for me to raise funds. So I welcome people to contact me. And again, I can be contacted through KufiFarm.org. I can be spoken to when I'm vending at the farmer's market, Kenosha Public Market. I'm always very happy to make new friends. And of course, when I'm at Equinox, Facebook, my first and last name, Curzio Caravati, if you can spell that, you will find me on Facebook. Friend me. I accept friendships if I, obviously, I vet that your page is real and we can communicate that way. I welcome schools. I welcome parents with children. I welcome friends, you know. Depending on the size of the group and how much you can afford to donate, that goes to the nonprofit. I eventually am going to offer master classes, probably first with my orchard. If you have a piece of backyard and you're thinking that you will want to grow food in your backyard, you will want to have a couple of fruit trees before you go to the seed catalog and just buy any tree. Why not visiting Kufi Farm Orchard and see how that tree will look like depending on what kind of root system it has been grafted on, how to take care of the trees, all of these things. I would like, and of course on my farm you're going to see trees that you probably won't see anywhere else very close. I'm not sure about the orchard in Burlington that may have all the trees that I have, but I have a tree. As I said before, apples are cloned. So you take a root system and you graft a piece of wood on that root system, and you're going to have the same tree that was grown by Louis XIII in France 400 years ago. You're going to see that tree on Kufi Farm. That's actually where my walk through the orchard starts.
Wow.
And you're going to see the shape. If you come in the summer and you see the apple hang, you're going to say, oh my God, this apple really looks different. It looks ancient. You know, it's an apple from 400 years ago. And I have Aesopus Spitzenberg that is also one of my passions. I'm very public about being a Freemason. I'm actually finishing my year as Master of Lodge 47. I'm also a member of Unity Lodge and Washburn Lodge, which are Masonic lodges. And as most Americans know, our founding fathers, many of our founding fathers were Masons. In Masonry, we do not eat children. we are very, very, very good people. We have women in our organization as Eastern Star, children, kids, and young men and young girls also are kind of helped into the organizations. The purpose is to become better people, better citizens, and I always like to mention our fourth president, I believe, Thomas Jefferson.
Third
president Thomas Jefferson on Monticello was growing apples, and Aesop's Spitzenberg was his favorite apple. We have that on Coffee Farm.
Wow. Very good. To close, I want you to remind our listeners about the beautiful website, which was launched very recently. I mean, just a couple of weeks before this interview we are recording today. Explain what people will find when they go to your website.
When they go to the website, and possibly this is the most important thing. I have invested a lot of my savings into this legacy of mine. And of course, anybody listening will say, good for you. And yes, I feel that as much as I have donated, because that is what I feel, you only get as much as you are willing to put in. So I'm in 100% into this. But I am not the kind of person that says, well, I put in 100%, so I don't have any space for you. This is a big tent, and anybody's invited to participate. Mm. And if you want to help me, you can become a volunteer, or you could help me financially through the website. You're going to find instruments of donating. You could be talking about me. So how are you going to be talking about me? Well, you talk about me by dressing like I dress. When you meet me, most of the time I'm wearing a t-shirt, a Coffee Farm t-shirt. CoffeeFarm.org is on the back. The front is a message. No bees, no food.
Mm.
That is my most popular shirt, because when I'm wearing that, people want to talk to me. You know, One Vine Tomato, KPM, Lazy Cook. We didn't speak about that, but that's too long of a story.
another day, another chapter in the remarkable life and legacy and story of Curzio Caravati. And again, we want to remind people, information on much of what we touched on today can be found at this website, CoffeeFarm.org, Kufi, K-U-F-I, referring to the Kenosha Urban Farming Institute. Curzio Caravati, thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we will be previewing for you what promises to be three memorable performances this weekend at Carthage College, the annual Carthage College Christmas Festival. The 150th is this weekend, with the theme of Glory in the Highest. We'll be talking with Matthew Hoagland and Maggie Burke, who are the primary coordinators of this immense event, which features all of the musical ensembles of Carthage College. And then on Friday's Morning Show, we will talk about another significant musical event this weekend, performances of Handel's Messiah at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And these performances are being done in memory of Francis Bedford, a longtime member of the music faculty at Parkside who passed away in early 2023. And these performances will take place in the beautiful Francis Bedford Concert Hall. Francis Bedford played harpsichord for every single performance of Handel's Messiah leading up to 2021. And her son, Monty Bedford, is also part of Friday's Morning Show and will be playing oboe in this weekend's performances. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Our weather forecast today is for skies eventually becoming cloudy and conditions becoming windy, with scattered rain and snow showers possible late this afternoon. A high today of 38 degrees. Partly cloudy, windy, and quite cold overnight. In fact, the overnight low down to 12, with gusts tonight up to 45 miles per hour. Sunny tomorrow with a high of 26. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.